Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along. It's a Monday evening and there is plenty happening. Joe Malloy with you this evening. Chelsea are nothing else if not a sacking club, and Frank Lampard knew this. He went in with his eyes wide open, but probably was hoping for more than 18 months. And so it happens. 3-year deal, 18 months is when the bullet came. Pat Nevin joins us this hour to give us the inside track on what went wrong at Chelsea. Meanwhile, Leinster conjured up a brilliant try to beat Munster in Thomond Park on Saturday night. Munster were very good. Andy Farrell has named a 36-man Six Nations squad. We have got Liam Toland and Rory O'Connor on Monday Night Rugby. That's on the way after eight. And then, as part of our grassroots series here in Off the Ball all week, we'll analyse the quality of our talent development when it comes to Irish football. That's after 9 o'clock on the football show. I know lots of you involved in Irish football at various levels would love your thoughts, anecdotes, general assessment on the talented 7, 8, 9-year-old boys and girls and the routes available to them. 53106 is the text number. We are, as ever, at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, good evening to you.
Joseph, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Hope you're well too. Adrian Barry, good evening.
Evening, Joe, Richie.
So lots going on. We'll come to Chelsea and the rugby in a few moments' time. Obviously, the grassroots series on the way after 9 o'clock. We're looking at football this evening. I know the lads kicked it off this morning, Adrian, with Jason Sherlock and Pat Daly. Pat's with the GAA Director of Games Development, talking about dropout rates and GAA. So hopefully some interesting conversations coming across the week.
Yeah, really looking forward to some good names, more names coming over the course of the week as well. That to build on the two lads that were on this morning. So really looking forward to that. Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Like, my kids are too young to be getting too deep into conversations like that. And I think at the minute they're like 2 and 4. So let them at it, Joe. At the minute, I'll be taking a few notes and coming back to them in 5 or 6 years' time.
Well, this evening on the football show, the guests, we have Shane Keegan, who knows his way around Irish football at various levels, currently with Dundalk, and Dr. Laura Finnegan, a name you may have heard of. She is a member of the football research group at Waterford IT. So, in effect, the football research group are studying this and studying Irish practices and studying best practice worldwide. And you name it, it's all there. What part of the country you're born in has an effect. We all know what time of the year you're born in has an effect too. And we will get her sense of how we're doing, get Shane's sense of how we're doing. Tomorrow, I must say, I'm looking forward to tomorrow evening because Niall Moyne is going to join us. I don't know if you're watching Operation Transformation at all, but I was watching it the other evening and it was kind of interesting. He was making the point that we don't really have a standardised fitness test in Ireland. The state has never put one together. Struck me as a good way to keep a general tab and if we're going in the right direction or not. I suspect we're not. But to that end, Niall Moyne put one together for the show and it had various markers. So from memory, and we'll get him to outline it tomorrow, for instance, it jumped out at me, a man in his 30s, for instance, amongst many other things, this isn't the whole fitness test, but has to be able to, you know, you should be able to do 16 press-ups, full press-ups, knees off the ground. 16 press-ups, that is a basic, you know, standard marker of fitness, for instance, amongst many other tests, you know. And got me kind of thinking, yeah, that could put a few of us to the pin of our collars if we did Niall Moyne's standardised fitness test.
Well, surely, yeah. Like, if it's a standardised test, like Operation Transformation has many flaws in terms of body image and all that kind of stuff, but surely for people of different sizes and people of different builds, a fitness test, much like a quote-unquote BMI, would differ for people of different shapes and sizes.
I didn't get that impression, actually. I think the BMI situation obviously can vary massively. If you're a very, yeah, very fit person and you've got muscles to beat the band, your BMI can read poorly. No, but I think his standardized fitness test was just an estimation of where you should really be for your age, you know? So, for instance, the 16 push-ups for in your 30s as a male, that drops down right down to 12 in your 40s, you know? So
good.
I think it's...
And
probably keeps going down further. And, you know, he was really good on the extent to which resistance training and weight training becomes so important from your 40s onwards, you know? But, I don't think it made allowances, Rich, for how you're coming to the party. It was more this is where you should be really for your age.
Surely it should. Carry out these things if you're, say, like height and weight would be playing into this massively, you'd imagine.
Well,
like if you're somebody of my build,
yeah,
you would have a different fitness expectation to somebody who is, say, 5'3 and a little bit on the skinnier side.
I'll put that to him. I would suspect, for instance, on the push-ups, if you're 5'3 and on the skinny side, then you don't have much weight to lift, but you know, you're a bigger man. You should be able to, you know, build more muscles. I didn't get the impression that actually it's a, well, you know, for how you are now kind of a thing, 11 push-ups is good. I thought it was like, you're in your 30s, you're male. Yeah, you know, you should be able to lift your body weight 16 times in a push-up. Thought that was it. You're quivering there, Richie. You don't like the sound of this.
Not really, no. I don't like the idea that there's somewhere down the line someone's going to have the bright idea to film this and put it up on the website.
Well, I mean, it's the next inevitable idea off the back of this chat tomorrow, isn't it?
But I'm busy.
In this clip I was watching the other night, it was pretty brief and quickly went into showing a montage of them all doing the fitness test. So I'm curious to get some thoughts from him on, you know, Adrian, what are the basic markers of fitness that we should all be hitting for our age and gender, and what are they? So we have a sense of where we are, because some people, you know, might try and do their 16 push-ups now in their 30s as a male and be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, I think I've heard and watched and read a lot about this over the last few weeks. It's probably just a function of where we're at the minute with everything that's going on. But I think that the benefits of... I think that a lot of what Niall Moyne is trying to do outside of the sort of the weeds of something as specific as this is to create a national conversation about our position from a health and well-being point of view, and the infinite benefits that can be had from being a bit fitter in terms of tackling stuff like mental health, dementia as you get a bit older, the very obvious physical effects, the benefits that you can get from that to something like a health service. And I think that what he's trying to do is spark conversation about it.
Yeah, for sure. So he's on the way tomorrow. If you have any questions, I think we'll probably play that out around 8 o'clock or so, and we'll put them to him. Because every time you read a newspaper, our childhood obesity situation doesn't seem to be going in the right direction. So Frank Lampard, Adrian, he knew this day had come eventually. That is the troublesome part of taking the Chelsea job 18 months in.
I felt a bit sorry for him today. It was my first reaction, Joe. I don't know if that was just shows the milk of human kindness with me, or if that was a general thing. A general thing or not, but
Richie spat on the floor and said, "Whatever, he's grand."
I did feel a bit of sympathy for him. I think that look, it's Chelsea, right? So you go in there with your eyes wide open. Maybe he thought he was going to get slightly different treatment because of this fantastic relationship we're constantly bet over the head with that apparently he has with Abramovich, and obviously his relationship with the club. Maybe he was expecting something a bit different, but the grass is always greener at Chelsea. Like, I mean, you just have to do a quick scan of the history of their managers over the last 20 years under Abramovich. New man in, new man gone. And it'll be the same with Thomas Tuchel, I think. See that coming through in the last few minutes? Am I wrong about that he's got the job? It'll be the exact same scenario. He's like the next hot ticket in town, and he's one of these managers who's on vogue with good reason, obviously, around and about. But I think that, you know, Lampard hasn't probably had the greatest of fortune. He's extremely young in his managerial career. Where does he go from here? God knows. It would have been nice. Chelsea are not a nice club. It would have been nice to have seen him get another. See out the season, see how he gets on. Results haven't gone his way. He's performed very poorly against. Two or three wins, scraped wins since the start of December. So there are reasons there for all that. I think fundamentally what it comes down to for me is Chelsea are asking themselves if it's about getting results now. And for them it is. If they could wait a bit, then hang on to him. But fundamentally, we want results now. He's gone.
Yeah. So he was flavour of the month.
He played under 10 managers. He played under 10 managers himself at Chelsea. So, like, you talk about playing or going in with his... Well, it depends on what you count as permanent and what you count as a caretaker. And Avram Grant kind of fits into that mould a couple of times. But he played under, you know, 10 managers. I think 7 of them utterly permanent. So it's not even that he went in with his eyes open. He helped create the culture that ultimately got him sacked today, because he was able to perform under a series of managers, as were that coterie of players, the likes of Drogba, Terry and so on, who were able to perform and deliver trophies to that club, even though the managerial merry-go-round was going at pace. So he should have seen what was coming when results weren't going his way, instead of, you know, hitting out the journalists as he was the latter end of last week. So he created the culture that got himself fired. And I'd be interested to see where he does go from here, because there aren't many, like, he's not viewed as that upper echelon of coach just yet. Like, he's not viewed as your Guardiola's, your Tuchel's, your, you know, foreign flavour of the month. He can't go really to another of the top clubs in the Premier League, because a couple of those would be Tottenham and Arsenal. So they're London clubs who wouldn't necessarily err towards a former Chelsea favourite. Manchester City probably will never go near him. Liverpool, Manchester United, no. So he kind of has to define himself with his next job as regards what kind of manager he is. And I'd be interested to see if he takes time out, if he's willing to jump in the next club that asks him, or if he holds out for something like the England job. Because if ever there was somebody who was absolutely painted to be the England manager, it would be Frank Lampard, rightly or wrongly.
On the point about, you know, has to define himself, I couldn't really tell you how Chelsea played under Lampard. If there was a damning aspect to the whole thing, I wouldn't really know what's a Frank Lampard team, and he's 18 months into the job. And year one, you know, by most metrics went pretty well. They lost Eden Hazard, there was the transfer ban, he finished fourth, got Champions League football, made an FA Cup final. That was very promising in many ways. And then you spend 220 million sterling over the summer with Ziyech and Werner and Havertz and Chilwell and Mendy, and the goalposts change, you know. And when you're losing 5 of your last 8, 6 losses in the Premier League in total, 11 points off top spot, that's where it gets sticky. It seems as well he was clashing behind the scenes.
With Granovskaya?
Yes.
Yeah. And the point is that, you know, you're talking about changing goalposts. He didn't change the goalposts for himself necessarily. They had that money available to them. Granovskaya, under the okay of Abramovich, would have gone off and spent it. And not lumped him with those players. He would have had a say, obviously, in who came in, who didn't. But I think he would have been almost happy enough to tick along with the squad that he had last year, building with youth and bringing in one or two really excellent players, not the glut that they brought in, which is always going to cause trouble for whoever's in charge.
Mm. He's going to be the next Sam Allardyce, by the way. That is the route.
That's his MO.
That is the route. Honestly, I'm 100%. Like, that's the route for Frank Lampard now. Like, those clubs that you mentioned, Richie, they are not going to take a punt on him.
No.
There's none of the big European clubs that are going to go for him. He has to do a job that is possibly beyond him and most other managers, which is like some sort of a Roy the Rovers manager thing now, with an average club over the next while and bring them into unlikely places. It all seems unlikely. I think he'd become a journeyman, and I'd say that with, like, you know, fair play. You know, you carve a career for 30 years going around the lower reaches of the Premier League, and good luck to him.
It's a lucrative business. I think that's right, though. I think he got he jumped the several rungs on the ladder. This was it. This was your reputation has secured you this job. Now you got to do something a bit special. And if you do something special, you're on the A-list merry-go-round, and your career is just the next 20 years of heaven. But he's messed up, and so he's right back into the litter. And who knows, like, bottom 10 Premier League club, maybe a top half Championship club is his next
destination.
Well,
if he's thinking outside the box,
he'll have to do a very good job.
People are talking about Celtic as well, because that's a vacancy that's going to come open soon enough. And he has previous in MLS as well, so why not America? That could be somewhere that he could further explore in the next couple of years.
We'll talk to Pat Nevin, see what he makes of it all in the next 15, 18 minutes or so. The news round and Off the Ball and News Talk with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Andy Farrell, 36-man squad, named today.
Yeah. And Ulster prop Tom O'Toole and Munster scrum half Craig Casey are the only two uncapped players in that squad. Jacob Stockdale misses out, with Andy Farrell saying the winger come fullback has a knee injury. There's no room for the likes of Luke McGrath, John Cooney, Jack Carty, John Klein or Dan Levy, but Tadhg Furlong is included despite not having played since last February. He is likely to make his return against Scarlets in the Pro 14 this coming Saturday for his province Leinster. And speaking ahead of the squad announcement on this morning's OTBAM, Alan Quinlan says Furlong needs to be included.
Hopefully Tadhg Furlong is going to be back involved with Leinster against Scarlets this week, and that'd be a massive boost because Andrew Porter has been kind of trudging away there for a long time, and he's been superb, to be fair. But I don't think anyone has played their way out of a team that you or I, Ger, could pick at this stage.
There's a huge risk involved in picking Furlong for the Six Nations on the back of the fact that he hasn't played enough rugby. Do you hope to give him game time towards the end of the Six Nations? Is that like, you know, coming off the bench for 10 minutes here or there in the last two games? Is that as ambitious as we could be, even if he was to play to start or get 40 minutes next week?
No, I think you wouldn't be starting him against Wales, even if he comes and plays, even if he goes and plays next week against the Scarlets. I think you definitely have him on the bench. You'd have him in your 23. It depends about, you know, depends how much workload he's had in the last 2 weeks. I think he trained fully last week with Leinster. So obviously, if he's no repercussions and no setbacks, the training workload as well will be increased for him and tailored for him throughout the next couple of weeks. So it just depends. I'd be getting him back into the group as quickly as possible. You can imagine, you know, with 10 or 15 minutes to go, bringing Tyden Furlong off the bench would be a massive boost for any side. So he has that quality. He's just got to be physically right. He's not probably physically fit to play 80 minutes of international rugby, but I'd certainly have him involved as soon as possible if he's given the clear.
Yeah, you certainly would. February 2020, the last time Tyden Furlong was played rugby, so it's been a long old stint out. Andrew Porter managed 80 minutes at Thomond Park. We're fretting once again on Johnny Sexton.
Yeah, it seems he'll be okay, but he will link up with the Ireland squad ahead of the Six Nations despite a fresh injury concern. Leinster saying today they had half suffered a minor muscle injury during Saturday night's win over Munster at Thomond Park. James Lowe is also continuing to rehab a groin injury, but he too will be joining up with the Ireland squad, which was named today.
We've Rory O'Connor and Liam Toland on the way after 8 o'clock. Loads to discuss with the lads. Once again, Adrian, it was a Leinster win over Munster. The gap narrowing. It's hard to know if Munster take great encouragement from this and a sense of we're getting closer all the time, or do they walk away saying, geez, near dominance for a huge portion of that game and still we couldn't get it done?
I'd say both, Joe, I'd imagine. And looking at the game at the weekend, I'd say they leave with both of those things. But like in the long term, there's nothing between them. God, there was nothing between them at all. And like even in terms of like the hunger aspect of it, that intangible thing, Munster were right on that. And then, you know, for me, looking at the game on, what was it, Saturday night, they were like dogs at the breakdown. I thought, like, geez, we weren't giving Leinster a second to sort of pause on the play. They were all over in the way that Leinster weren't. And I think that like there are some sort of, I don't know, maybe clunky, but maybe I was thinking about Leinster Munster in the sort of Liverpool United way, Joe. Like, was there some comparisons there? I kind of thought that United are the Munster maybe in this conversation. So that like the former great, showing signs of being back, still a bit of work to be done, but impossible to argue that you couldn't leave that Munster game of the weekend saying that they're not. They are. They really look back in a big way. You know, nothing between them. And then Leinster are kind of like that Liverpool top of the perch, there to be shot at. A couple of injuries have maybe shown a bit of fallibility about them, but obviously the difference being at the weekend that Leinster have a deeper culture, I think, of winning now, like that power play that they pull off at the end.
Yeah.
Like just that deep culture of winning, I think, is the thing that sees them out. Yeah.
Jordan Larmour is an interesting case. We'll get Rory's thoughts and Liam Toland as well after 8 o'clock. On the one hand, Adrian, the electricity, you know, ball in open play, and he creates havoc and he's brilliant and it's exactly what you want from an Irish player with the ball in his hands, and he scored the try as well, obviously. And then clearly Conor Murray decided he knew where he was kicking the ball, and they kept doing it and they kept getting some joy. I think he might have had issues with four high catches, and it's not the first time that's happened. So how do you balance those two with an Irish backline that appears to be keen and increasingly at 15? You've got Earls to pick, and you've got James Lowe now back to pick from as well, Stockdale injured. So where does Larmour feature?
Well, I think we know what Joe Schmidt would have done, don't we? He never would have seen much game time, I don't think, under Joe Schmidt. It remains to be seen with Andy Farrell. But I you'd have sympathy with the fact that like it's the Six Nations, and however much you get away with that in a Pro 14 game, I don't think you can afford that, really, can you, in a Six Nations game? Like those kind of, you wouldn't call them unforced exactly, because more often than not, he was under a bit of pressure.
He was, but yeah.
You would think that, thinking a Six Nations match, that isn't maybe Italy and Scotland, he says with like a bit of trepidation. But yeah. I think that you can't afford to have a player on the pitch that you're uncertain about him there. Now look, does Jordan Larmour have a reputation for being that bad under the high ball? No, he doesn't.
Well, I was just going to say the worst thing you can have is a reputation for it, because then you'll be picked on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, true, it's true. And then what he needs to do, obviously, is the next day come out and win everything that's going. Mm. And that's, it's a bit of a step up, obviously, when you're going into the Six Nations, so that'll be all the tougher. But, I don't think he gets written off on that basis,
no.
To be honest.
No, no, no.
I think he'd have to do it again in a, you know, well, it'd be a Six Nations game, won't it, yeah. At this stage. And at that point, he does start to get a reputation for it, and it's hard to shake.
It's getting competitive back there, though. You've got Keenan, you've got Earls, you've got Lowe, you've got Stockdale injured, and you've got Conway, who's in the squad as well. So actually, suddenly, that looks pretty healthy. Wickham Spurs this evening, Rich?
Yes, indeed. No Matt Doherty for Spurs, no Daryl Horgan for Wickham. So the Irish interest in this one is pretty much nil. The Championship side playing host to Spurs from 7:45. Kickoff at Adams Park there. And Everton will be hosting the winners of this one in round 5. Meanwhile, the latest coronavirus testing among Premier League players and staff has found a 50% drop in new infections inside just 7 days. Over 2 rounds of checks last week involving just over 2,500 people, there were only 8 positive outcomes in samples taken between Friday and yesterday. No cases at all. The improvement will be seen as a real boost to the English top flight, which has imposed tighter COVID-19 protocols in a bid to ward off any threat of competition being suspended there. Here at home, Andy Lyons has signed a new contract with Bohemians. The 20-year-old fullback broke into the Bulls first team as a youngster back in 2018 and has gone on to represent the Republic of Ireland up to under-19 level.
Mm. Plenty of texts in and lots of different things on the grassroots discussion. For instance, Shane in Cork makes a point we made as well. The BMI, badly flawed, doesn't account for age, body structure, sex, size of muscle, etc. Lots of people who have bad BMI can be in great shape. Yeah, agreed. Michael in Belfast, guys, I still believe the majority of underage kids, this is advice for you, Adrian, need to be encouraged, or dare I say even forced, into participating in exercise or sport. Kids don't know best. If they did, we'd let them decide if they wanted to wear seatbelts or not. Sometimes they need to be told what to do for their own good, says Michael in Belfast. Paul in Leash, I'm not a cheerleader for the everyone gets a medal approach, but I can well remember school sports days where schoolmates would be in tears because they lost or messed up. That fear of failure ruins sports for loads of young people. So I'm in favour of trying to make sure fun rather than achievement is at the heart of underage kids up to early teens at least, says Paul in Leash. Yeah, that's always an interesting one. Now, I must say, as a kid, I loved winning. I didn't love losing, but I like the competition was a part of it. And when I watched Man United on the telly, I knew that they won or lost. And that was part of it for me. And I really enjoyed it. But I'm sure, Adrian, it must put off some people who tend to lose a lot. I'm asking, what's it like?
What is it like? I used to be all right at sport when I was a kid. Yeah. It obviously deserted me in a fairly significant way after that job. But I'm kidding.
But that's always one. You know, do you have competitive games or not?
I don't know the answer. I think that it would appear that like not is the answer in so many ways from the stuff that you read and look at or whatever. But I mean, I know even stuff like, I know that the GAA have obviously made big inroads in that regard. But then locally, when you talk to people about these non-competitive competitions, like frequently you figure out that when the local arrangements are put in place, that, you know, there'd be no medals or cups given away at the games. And then the team that won suddenly produce a bag of 30 medals on the way home and everybody's into Supermax and whatever you're having yourself. So, I think there's an element of that. And kids obviously love that. They thrive on it. But, I definitely don't know the answer to it.
Yeah. Rich, are your kids of a sport playing age, winning and losing age?
Yeah. To a degree, yeah. Dara's what, under 10, well, going into under 10s now, and everything, as we all know, is on hold at the minute as regards playing games against other teams. But he had been involved in Whitehall's kind of under 9s games, whereby they'd be playing teams from the locality, be it like Clontarf or up towards Swords, whatever. And they, you know, will play 2-3 matches within the space of a morning, pretty short affairs, back and forth. And they would keep tabs on who wins and loses themselves. Like the players more than the officials.
Right.
And the referees in charge. And so they definitely have a sense of winning and losing. I think that's almost born into people who are gravitating towards these games. Younger than that, I mean, no, it's just a case of getting them out and getting them involved. The two younger lads are going to be involved in the minor training camps up in Whitehall there. So not minor as in under 18s, but I mean, like, just getting started, getting the very basics of catching and throwing and fisting and kicking and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's a case of just getting them out there, first of all. And if they happen to develop that winning and losing mentality, let's call it, all well and good. I mean, if you want to press on with that, that's fine, but if they just want to continue on with the enjoyment of it, like, I'm absolutely 100% here for that as well.
Yeah, well I mean, certainly what shouldn't happen, I hope it's not anymore, is win at all cost mentality amongst coaches, and we've got to go out and beat these guys.
I don't want to generalize sports, but you do hear, like, horror stories, let's say, from you know, other places. But in terms of what I can only speak to what they're involved in now. Yeah. Like, they are encouraged to get on top of the skills that's being asked of them in a particular game, or bits like that. You can come across a few overzealous coaches and mentors from other clubs who are just a bit louder more than anything else. But for the most part, what I've only encouraged, encountered positive from that kind of age group.
Yeah, I think awareness has increased in the last while anyway on that front when it comes to coaches involved. You might give us a last story.
Yeah, flurry of contracts at Ulster today. Robert Balakoon, Luke Marshall, Alan O'Connor and Aaron Sexton all signing new two-year deals there as well. And just on the Six Nations absentees, because there are plenty of them, three of Ireland's Six Nations rivals have suffered squad withdrawals today. Joe Marler and Joe Launchbury out of the England squad due to personal reasons and a stress factor respectively, replaced by Tom West and Charlie Yules. France centre Virimi Vakatawa will miss their entire campaign, having suffered a knee ligament injury in Racing's narrow defeat to Bordeaux at the weekend. His place goes to Pierre-Louis Barassi. Winnie Antonio, Jean-Baptiste Gros and Swan Rebage have also pulled out to be replaced by Dorian Alighieri, Thierry Paiva and Thomas Laveau, while Italy have seen Matteo Minozzi pull out due to personal reasons, and Jake Paledri has also pulled out. He has a knee ligament problem. So the Six Nations team is looking to pull together squads, it seems.
Yeah, and that won't be the end of that. Fellas, we are done. Thanks very much. Adrian Barry, Richard McCormack. Cheers for that.
Cheers,
that was
cheers.
Your news round this evening. Pat and Evan going to join us next.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.